Happy Monday, Jules. It's the 20th of July, which means it's only 8 days until Harry Kane's birthday. I'm hyped. I'm amped. I'm excited. We've got, I think, a very good show today. We'll be talking a little bit of Inter because, of course, they were held by Roma. Antonio Conte is very angry.
Not happy at all. I mean, he really is, to be fair.
There's a surprise. We'll have some quick hits. We have new champions in Spain, although not really a surprise, in Turkey. We'll deal with all that. But we're going to start at the top, and we're going to get our specialist, Mark Ogden, on to help us with this. United falling apart against Chelsea. 3-0 defeat. David De Gea, not good. Arsenal and Manchester City play full-strength squads, Chelsea arguably. I know there's a lot to get into, but I just want to start with the squad selection here. United have a chance at silverware, which they say, but he, I won't say he plays the B team, but he rests a lot of players on, Pogba, Martial. Is this a case of the Champions League? Is it as simple as that?
Just a priority somewhere else?
Well, I think obviously the Champions League is the priority over the FA Cup, and I think that will remain the case at Man United now for the foreseeable future. But look, the first thing I'd say in mitigation is that United played on Thursday night, which was 48 hours less rest than Chelsea, so that was a factor. But still, prior to the Palace game, they put the same starting 11 five games running, and that shows you that Solskjaer trusts 11 players, and beyond that, he's not too confident of what he has. I mean, and we saw why yesterday, because Daniel James came in, just seemed not good enough. He had a great start, scored a few goals in August, but he's done nothing since, and he's just a young kid who runs. And that,
That's a good summary.
They haven't got the depth. And I was surprised that De Gea played, because De Gea usually has a day off during the FA Cup, and he had a day off yesterday as well, but he unfortunately was on the pitch. But, United don't have the quality. Eric Bailly was unlucky to go off, but again, Eric Bailly is unreliable. Victor Lindelof is unreliable. Harry Maguire is pretty much unreliable. Have you seen the clip this morning that shows him like the Keystone Cops, really, running around in defence with the ball at his feet? So Solskjaer made changes. He had to rest players ahead of the last two games of the season against West Ham and Leicester, but the problem is when he makes changes, United look a lot weaker than the first 11.
I mean, they already looked tired in the last two games towards the end of the games. He made mistakes against Southampton by taking off Pogba and Bruno Fernandes almost at the same time, which means they had no players to get the ball out from their own half or their own 30 yards. I thought against Palace they looked tired as well. So in a way, it was right to rotate. Ogi is right though. There's either the talent, enough talent outside of that very strong first 11. Yeah, I don't know why he changed the formation and go back to three at the back when that 4-2-3-1 worked pretty well before. There was no need again to go back and then that meant start Eric Bailly, start Brandon Williams.
You don't need three at the back when you're playing against Giroud. When you're playing against Olivier Giroud, you don't need three at the back. Exactly. I just don't understand the logic in that.
I'm going to stick up for Solskjaer a little bit because part of me thought, okay, when Leicester lost to Spurs earlier in the day, I mean, I don't know he's going to change
his team. He didn't change his team because they lost.
But he could have approached things a little differently. But if you look at the table, and it's simple math, United play Leicester on the last day of the season, right? And the reality is that even if United have a game in hand now, right? But even if United win that game in hand, they go 3 points clear of Leicester. But if they lose to Leicester and it's all in 90 minutes, their goal difference, as we think right now, is exactly the same. If they lose by X number of goals more or whatever, then they're not playing in the Champions League next year. So I think we give Solskjaer a pass here.
I think you're right. I was watching that Leicester-Spurs game at the weekend thinking that every goal that went in was crucial. I think if Leicester had conceded one more, I think it would have really swung the balance in United's favour. So I think United need to beat West Ham on Wednesday. And if they can beat them well, if they can win 4-0, I think that gives them a cushion for going to Leicester at the weekend, because then they would have to lose 2-0 then to miss out. So I think it's that close. And I think Solskjaer is probably right to think that he has to focus on those two games because... if you're not in the Champions League,
we all agree we're going to give Solskjaer a pass, Mark, but we need to save time here so we can go and go after the villain of the day, David De Gea. All right, we know the narrative here. The guy's made mistakes. He's not the keeper he was. I think most people would agree with that. They were pretty egregious mistakes. I think we can fair to say mistakes on all three goals, the second one possibly being the worst. What I don't get here is he's the highest paid goalkeeper in the world. And he's the highest paid goalkeeper in the world because his contract was extended what, a year ago? And the thinking at the time was that, well, if you don't extend his contract, you lose him on a free. You can't sell him because nobody wants to buy him because he makes too much money already. So let's extend him and keep him around.
That can't be true.
Well, you, am I wrong, Mark?
No, you extend the contract because you think he's very good and he earns, you know, he deserves that money, and you want to keep him because he's...
But the argument is because you can't sell him, if you don't extend his contract, then you have to go and spend 60, 80 million on all black or whatever. I mean, is that a fair summation, Mark, or am I being unfair?
Surely. You don't keep
it is a fair summation, but I think United called it wrong last year. I think we've all seen De Gea decline slowly at first, but I think quite rapidly since the World Cup in 2018. He's not had a good 2 years. And, you know, that mistake he made for the second goal on Sunday, it was identical to the mistake he made at Tottenham in the first game after the restart. Shot straight at him, couldn't hold on to it. And he's making the same mistakes repeatedly. And I think this is beginning to remind me what happened to Joe Hart at Man City, a goalkeeper who got himself into a comfort zone, thought he was better than he is. And the mistakes were always the same mistake down low to his left. And it's the same with De Gea, straight through his body, low to his left, always tried to save with his feet. And I've said this so many times now, I think he's an outdated goalkeeper. I think that, you know, Oblak is a great goalkeeper. Alisson, Ederson, Ter Stegen, Neuer, they've all left him behind because they're prepared to play a different way. They'll take command of the penalty area. They'll come out of the penalty area. De Gea, like I say, he's been in a comfort zone for too long. And I think Solskjaer now has to make a big call. And everyone talks about he's a Fergie clone. He does what Sir Alex Ferguson used to do. Well, Ferguson dropped Jim Leighton, Fabian Barthez, Massimo Taibbi, Mark Bosnich, Tim Howard. He was ruthless with goalkeepers.
Yeah, you know, but sorry, with all due respect, Mark Bosnich is Australian, Tim Howard's American, Massimo Taibbi, I don't know what planet the guy's from. I mean, it takes a lot more chutzpah here to go and drop the guy you just made the highest paid goalkeeper in the world.
But I think I dropped Ozil, so why can't Solskjaer do it? It's exactly the same.
No, I think the big difference is that Ozil's contract expires in 12 months.
But last year we said Emery dropped him as well. But I don't get that, Gab. I'm sorry. He's not good enough. Drop him regardless of the money he's on.
I'm not saying you should never be dropped, but I want to go back to because I think we need to flag these mistakes that were made before. I know we've been hard on Woodward. I've been maybe more accommodating towards Woodward than some other people. But this is what bugs me about the decision. I understand, as we said before in the summary, why you felt you had to extend De Gea's contract, right? Because it was objectively hard to sell him because the decline had already started. His reputation outside England wasn't what it was within England, and there weren't that many other big clubs who could afford him when he had a goalkeeper. I get that. You hardball him and you say, listen, we'll give you a new contract, but you know what? We're going to cut your wages because he was already in enormous wages. Or we're going to do this on our terms. If you want to become a free agent and you want to go test yourself out there, good luck. Go see where you go. Go enjoy your time in China. Go enjoy playing for some, you know, Europa League team. Have fun at Roma or Valencia or wherever your agent takes you. That's when you had to go hardline to him. Show us, you know, I'd like to see more from clubs doing this. Show us that you're the keeper you were before, because you've not been playing up to the contract and now you want a raise. And instead, they folded. And I think that was the mistake.
The thing is, clubs that do it from a position of strength, and United were particularly strong last year. They were in a bad place. They just lost Mourinho. Solskjaer had come in, and they weren't a club that was strong enough to do that. And I think there are similarities in this to what happened with Arsenal and Mesut Ozil. They made a call on Sanchez. They let Sanchez go. And I think when United gave De Gea the contract, they expected to lose Pogba at some point. So they couldn't, as Man United club that projects itself to the biggest club in the world, they couldn't be seen to be losing two of their biggest stars at the same time. Now, obviously, situations have dictated that Pogba has remained. I think he will stay beyond this period. But De Gea, they're now stuck with him as Arsenal are stuck with Mesut Ozil, because, like you say, his wages are too big. There's not a market for goalkeepers right now in the world. The only club I could see that would be remotely interested would be Juventus, but I don't think they'll pay wages.
Why?
Because I don't think Chesney's a goal. Why now? But what, 6 months ago? I don't think Chesney's a goalkeeper of Juventus standard.
But he's better than De Gea, you would not swap Chesney for De Gea.
The point I'm making, that the fact that there's such a limited scope for him to go to, so they're stuck with him.
All right, we're gonna have to leave it there, Mark. Thanks for this. You guys, all I'm going to say, just going to give myself the last word on this. First of all, the fact that Arsenal did it with Ozil simply means that another club that made really poor decisions contractually made the same mistake that United did. And I also think, though, this is something that's not going to go away. And as Mark said,
but if you've got Dean Henderson and he's better than De Gea, you don't play De Gea regardless on how much money he has.
They had Dean Henderson when they extended De Gea. This is the other thing.
He has played the championship. Now he's had a very good season in the Premier League. He's going to come back, play him then. You don't care if De Gea is on £5 a week or 300,000.
Henderson isn't ready yet, Jules. Henderson's not ready for money. United have got the best number two in the Premier League in Sergio Romero, I think. They don't give enough opportunities.
I might have to send Emi Martinez around his house.
No, but the point was just, if you have someone better than De Gea, don't play him. You don't have to drop him, regardless on how much money he's on.
I don't disagree with that point. Augie, thanks so much.
Cheers, guys.
Jules, Augie was on such a roll talking United and De Gea and Woodward, all his favorite topics, that we didn't mention Chelsea at all. But, okay, so De Gea gifted them goals, but Chelsea played well.
Yeah, they would have won even without De Gea's mistakes. I think they were far too good for United. There's different reasons. We talked about the changes United made tactically and in terms of the players. But I think Chelsea's game plan was just perfect, spot on. To go three at the back for a game like this was great. The energy, the intensity, the press. I mean, Reece James, even Marcos Alonso, Mount and Willian, of course, and then Giroud in the form of his life, maybe. You know, he's 34 in September. And I think
they got a lot of rest earlier this season.
Yeah. But you know, so I wondered yesterday, and I said that to him, if he'd played a bit more the first half of the season, where Chelsea were very good and Tammy Abraham was really good, I'm not saying that, you know, that would have changed.
Tammy Abraham was playing every single game.
I do wonder, for example, if you do lose at home against Southampton, I wonder if you lose at home against Bournemouth, if Giroud starts that game maybe and you play in a bit of a different way.
Right. You know, so really. Just because they don't want this to be knee-jerk, what about all the people who talk about, well, but Chelsea have lost 11 games this season and the defence is rubbish?
Because
this is what people say when they drop points or when they concede goals.
Then Guardiola and City have lost 9 league games this season as well. So you say, like, well, he's, you know, he's the same. And then people say, oh, Lampard, but people are not, they're too kind with him and stuff. Of course, he makes mistakes. But Pep has made mistakes, Klopp has made mistakes this season, everyone has made mistakes this season. That doesn't make Lampard either a genius or a complete useless manager. I think he's also learning a lot. I thought yesterday he was very mature. I think his team was so mature as well. And I just think that you can see the progress from... I was at Old Trafford for the first game against United. And I saw them yesterday. And there's a year, almost a year to the day, pretty much. And you were like, okay, it's a completely different team. It's incredible.
Although, wait, the first game of the season at Old... It was the first game of the season
at
Old
Trafford. Yeah, they lost 4-0 at Old Trafford.
That was the Zuma game, yeah?
That was the Zuma game, yeah.
All right. But they didn't play that badly in that game.
No, they didn't play badly. But still, if you look at the game, even without the result, and look at the way they played yesterday, and Zuma was there in both games, you can see the progress in the way they play. In again, as we say, the dynamic, the attitude, the maturity. It was, you know, it's great, and I think they deserve a lot of credit for that. Right. You know, going to the final.
I'm gonna leave you with this question. Given the way Willian has played,
it's a no.
Do you still say, you say muito obrigado?
You say
bye-bye.
Yeah. You say thanks, great years, but we move on. And if you go inside Kai Havertz, which you might be able to, it makes even less sense to keep Willian.
You're still on this Kai Havertz thing?
No, I don't know. I'm just saying, like, if that happens,
I don't know. People have talked about Kai Havertz so much. I get a little suspicious because it's the same people talking over.
Yeah.
It's obviously coming from his agent. Like, Kai Havertz has decided to leave the club. Chelsea are favorites. And it's just weird that they say this so explicitly. You know, if you remember the Ziyech situation.
Yeah.
Or the Timo Werner situation.
Yeah.
It was all quiet, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Here, it's like he's talking to, it's almost like he's trying to coax people out. They were talking 100 million. Now they're like, well, you know, 60 million
maybe,
plus bonuses.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't look. If you can get Havertz at the right price, by
of
all
course.
Means, get
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But I don't think he should be a priority for Chelsea. I don't think he is a priority for Chelsea. I think they're just like, hey, the price keeps dropping. Sure, we'll get him and we'll raise money elsewhere.
So would you give a new deal to Willian, like a 1+1, for example?
No. Because you need to find out who can play and who can't play. And, you know, you look at Callum Hudson-Odoi, which everybody seems to have forgotten, but 18 months ago, it's like, you know, he was the greatest thing in the world. He's had a bad injury. Let's find out what he can do. Pulisic can do. Let's find out where
Pulisic Ziyech didn't play yesterday. You know, didn't
exactly.
start. And Ziyech, obviously, not either. So I think what they're building this season is already very good. And the anticipation to next season with the new arrivals is just like, wow, okay.
It's a big squad, though. Huge calls.
Big pressure to come with it. Big pressure to come with it.
And also big call, who to keep, who to sell, and to sell well. So big decisions ahead. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Jules, enough United. Let's talk Serie A, because given Juventus dropping points left, right, and center, there was still the possibility that if Inter went on a run, or Atalanta, didn't happen. Inter held 2-2 by Roma. Inter once again taking the lead, failing to see it through. I don't know. I thought Inter didn't play well again. And it's not just the inability to keep the lead.
Yeah.
In some ways, this all goes by the wayside because Antonio Conte afterwards, we got angry Conte again. And this time he's going on about the schedule.
He's got a point.
Got a point about what?
About having less rest, you know, playing like... I mean, he went too far on they want us to fail and they're always against us and they slap us in the face.
All the stuff he never said when he was at Juve, right?
But that's his role, right?
Yeah, you know what? I get politically why you would say this. I mean, I'm going to try to sum up what he said. But basically, he's unhappy because he feels that, you know, they have to play every 3 days, which everybody does. It's a compressed schedule. You want to get things on television. But he complains the fact that they always play at night and, you know, games kick off at 9:45 local time. And then they get back at 4 o'clock in the morning. And then the next day, all they can do is like a warm down. And then the day after that, they got to prepare for the match and so on. And these aren't conditions in which to work. And part of me says, you know what? There's a global pandemic. I haven't gone back and looked through who plays first, later, Juve, this, that. But I also feel, dude, if you hadn't dropped all these stupid points along the way, you might be in a conversation for the title.
Yeah. Yeah. The title, they didn't lose it at Roma on Sunday night. They lost it against Bologna, for example, when they 1-0 up with a penalty to come and still managed to lose that game with just half an hour to go to lose the game. So you're right. He has made a mistake along the way. I'm not really sure what Romelu Lukaku is on the bench against Roma. I have to say, as good as Alexis has been.
He was tired. He was coming back from injury, supposedly. But,
come on. This is those crunch games where you can go back and put pressure on Juve. Surely put your best striker on. Surely. Yeah, even if he lasts just an hour, then bring out either Lautaro or Alexis, who has been great and probably deserves to start. So then bench Lautaro and then bring him on for the last half an hour and take Lukaku off. I don't know. I didn't get it.
My issue with this is, look, there's a long history in Serie A and elsewhere about saying things for effect, creating the siege mentality. But you say these things if they're calculated. And we know, for example, Jose Mourinho, historically has done this all the time. He's certainly not the only one. Conte in the past has done it too. But you say this when you can still influence something, you know, when there's something at stake.
Yeah.
At this point, there's nothing. It just sounds like you whining. It sounds like you coming up with sour grapes. Do you really think that they made the calendar to try to favor Juventus when the conversation was all about Lazio at that stage?
But it's also covering his own failure, right? It's also the way that which is more what Mourinho does as well. You deflect the attention on what you did, your choices, your tactics. You know, play Brozovic in that position and Gagliardini behind him. I'm not so sure. And then that's the way of deflecting it all onto the referee, because he had also a go at Di Bello and there probably was a foul before the first Roma goal on Lautaro.
Well, actually, let's talk about that. The foul on Lautaro. It was Kolarov on Lautaro. And basically,
he barges into him.
He barges into him, and then off that, they score also because, was it Brozovic on the goal line doesn't short his feet out. I looked at it, and you know, this was a situation where the VAR flagged it to the referee. The referee looked at it again and decided not to go and disallow the goal.
Yeah.
He decided it was a clear and obvious mistake. We can go back under a magnifying lens and look at all these situations. I don't have a problem with that not being called a foul.
No, me neither.
This is not something that
happened all season. I mean, there was when United played Liverpool at Old Trafford and they drew 1-1. The first goal came from a very similar move.
And also, they had to march it all the way up the pitch and score. Which
You know, it's not direct.
I don't know. I think this isn't going to make a thing. But I just think, look, I'm going to give Conte a pass on this one. You were angry. You let it all out. The beast came out. Conte also did make the point that, you know, this was a good season for Inter. The Europa League, of course, still out there.
Yeah.
Are you on board with that?
I think so. I think I've seen them enough this season to be able to say that it's an improvement compared to last year, that he brought a lot of positive things. And if you hire Conte, you also know there's another side of him when things are not going the way he wants or when there's a disappointment. And then he will shout and he will get angry, as we've seen quite a lot since the restart. But that cannot hide the fact that I think they're a much better team than they were before he arrived, that some of the signings have worked out really well. Lukaku first. And that potentially, if you build on this next season, you could be even more competitive.
I hate bringing up the word culture because it's all kind of like pie in the sky and you can use it both ways. But I think this is a situation. He has changed the culture of the team to some degree, maybe even the culture of the club.
Yeah,
I'd add Bastoni, of course, who's now a legitimate starter, still growing, still young. The downside is he hasn't integrated Eriksen. I think he's gone to the veterans a little too often, bringing in Moses and Young, short-term situations.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of work to do front office, but you're right. Lukaku's been a shining success. Lautaro has improved to the point that he's now a sellable asset, or you keep him and you've got your front two. There's no question that progress has been made.
Yeah.
I still think they're going to be slightly hamstrung financially going forward. Nainggolan, Perisic, these ghosts from the past.
Yeah, they need to sell.
So I think he's still going to have to do a lot of work on the training ground, and he has to sort out Eriksen. But for first season, I think it's a solid B+.
Yeah, and especially if you think about the injuries at some key points, Sensi,
of course,
especially Sensi being the biggest one, maybe. You think that it could have been even better.
Yeah, I guarantee you the plan wasn't to play Gagliardini every single game and Borja Valero every single game.
I mean, miss of the season for him, that's what we're giving him this season.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough Conte and his anger. Let's get some positivity in here. Let's go with some quick hits.
Let's go, Gab.
So they beat Liverpool, but I wasn't really impressed. But then they go and they beat City. And City, who were motivated and strong. This feels like a different Arsenal team.
You're right. I mean, you'll be harsh saying you were not impressed against Liverpool. Yeah, of course, they had to do a lot
Liverpool
of defending.
Liverpool could have scored 5 goals against them. Come on.
Yeah, but how many did they score? Since when? They won.
I expect Arteta's teams to play well. They played very well against City. They didn't play that well, in my opinion.
They exploited.
This was much better.
Mistakes. This was much better against a City team that especially in the first half, was dreadful. Let's be honest, they didn't have much to them. I thought they had.
They weren't bad in the second half, City. But just Arsenal
second
countered
half were
them.
Better. Sterling moved a bit more centrally, but I still thought they lacked a bit of idea. The two fullbacks are still not good enough for me, Walker and Mendy in that case. But yeah, Arsenal were great. They had a game plan. They stuck to it. They could have scored more goals. There's obviously the.
Does
first
it matter that I thought he went? I felt like for this game, he said, "All right, Nketiah, Saka, all right, let's go with the big boys here."
But that was right. I mean, I'm a bit biased because like I love Lacazette and he's French and he's my friend and Lex and everyone you want. But on a game like this, it shows one how good he is. That first half, and maybe people might not have seen him because he's involved in the goal, but it's the second assist, the Aubameyang goal. But he's hold the play. Was fantastic. The way that he can receive the ball under pressure and not lose it, even if sometimes it's a bit like, you know, limit, but he's not. He doesn't lose it. It's so beneficial to the team, so valuable to the team. You would not want to sell a player like that, a player like this, because you won't find another one like him.
So you sell Alba instead.
But you know, they complement each other so well. Yeah. Aubameyang could not do the work that Lacazette does with his back to goal. Impossible. No. He can't hold the ball up like that. His first touch is not as good. Technicality is not as good. But he's got different assets. And I think they were so good.
I like the fact that we're starting to see multifaceted Arsenal. So an Arsenal that can go and play a game like this, which isn't just parking the bus. No, it's a lot more sophisticated than that.
I mean, the first goal is 18 passes. Everybody touches the ball from your own six-yard box.
So, yeah, hope ahead.
But they need better players, of course, but I think there was so much positive in that game, and they might lose the final and finish.
Enough, Arsenal.
No, I'm just saying that doesn't take away some of the good things they've done since Arteta arrived.
Tremendous.
Speaking of City, we and in particular Mark Ogden have talked about the need for central defenders. Eric Garcia started again, keeping Otamendi and Stones on the bench. Pep supposedly loves him, but is he the answer, Gab?
No, I don't think so. I think this almost smacks of like praising this guy to high heaven. You know, the pun about he's so smart. Yeah, he's smart. He's not bad on the ball for a central defender. But, you know, I don't know that he has the muscle or the quickness
certainly not the quickness.
I mean, you compare him to Laporte, right? That's a standard.
You
want another Laporte. So I think he's somebody maybe who you think will develop. But no, they obviously still need. They still need central defenders. And I think it was indicative that in this game where he played his strongest team, because this is, Premier League doesn't matter for them at this stage, obviously, right? It's the FA Cup, win more silverware, and then the Champions League. You know, so you can go and you win your little treble. You've won CAS, win the FA Cup, win the Champions League. And you start this guy, I think it's as much as a message of what regard he holds Stones and Otamendi in.
Yeah, but then he costs you the second goal. Well, not him on his own because Mendy covers Aubameyang, but Garcia is at four on the second goal. So, you know, playing him ahead of Fernandinho, for example, who was on the bench, or even Otamendi and Stones, clearly cost you in that game. So you wonder, you're right, you play your strongest 11 and then you put that guy at centre back.
It's Pep's world.
It was crazy.
We're only visiting. Now, as we boldly predicted on the last show, Jules, Real Madrid became champions of La Liga on Thursday. And at the weekend, they drew 2-2 with Leganés. Jules, they were devastating after the restart. What did Zidane do? Right? I know you want your little 30 seconds to praise.
No, it's not.
Praise Zizou.
Yeah, because I think he deserves a lot of credit. He when he came back in March 2019, he said winning this La Liga the following season would be the priority more than anything else, and he delivered, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. He made this team very resilient, very good defensively, which is probably the best Real Madrid side we've had defensively in 30 years or 25 years.
Amazing what you can do when Varane is fit and Ramos is focused and Mandy
and Casemiro is on good form. Yeah, of course, it's not rocket science to play that. But
they weren't like this before.
Yeah, they were not like this before. They were far too leaky and even not well organized. I think Ferland Mendy, a left back, has made a big difference defensively compared to Marcelo. And also Thibaut Courtois, who's back to really, really his best level. And he's been outstanding all season, not just since the restart.
And he's had to cope with a ton of injuries as well. I know they have a very deep team, but you can have a deep team, but you still have players who are better than other ones. And a lot of the good ones got injured. He dealt with the Bale and James situations as best he could,
definitely.
Which, you know, is still problematic and a distraction. And
But even Modric, you know, maybe helped by the break and the, you know, the lockdown and stuff. But I thought Modric came back after the break in far better fitness than he was before.
Yeah.
Valverde was one of the findings of the season, without that. And then you had Karim Benzema, who up front carried you really going forward. So, you know, it was a very, very good season. And I think this is, of the 11 trophies he won there, the one that he values the most, for sure. Barcelona win 5-0 away to Alaves as Leo Messi scores two and gives one assist to win his seventh Pichichi and set a new record in terms of assist. If you want to be negative, it's his lowest goal total in La Liga since 2009 with only 25. But then again, he also led the league in assists, as we said, setting a new record with 21. And Gab, it seems Quique Setién will stick around now, at least until the Champions League is concluded.
Yeah, I mean, I think we said this last week. It's stupid to let Setién go.
Definitely.
Now. I think Messi's evolving into a slightly different player as he gets older, as he's adjusting to the players around him. I mean, it took him a while to figure out that, hey, look, you don't want Griezmann all the way wide in this scheme. The assist total, I think, is really, really impressive. I'm less concerned with the goals.
I mean, still half the goal he scored in what, 2012 or 13, it was something.
Is this his greatest season ever as an individual? No.
Yeah.
But he's 33 years old.
Yeah.
Is he the best player in La Liga? I think by a country mile.
Oh, no way. Give it to Benzema this season. Come on.
Yeah, give it to... So, one guy leads the league in goals and assists, but no, Benzema was better than Messi this season.
What? Is it just about the goals and the assists? So, you give it just because of goals and assists? You don't look at what the rest of the team has done behind you? You don't titles you've won?
Who has the better supporting cast? Real Madrid or Barcelona? Benzema or Messi?
Okay, second best goal scorer for Barcelona this season. Luis Suarez with 17 goals?
Okay, fine.
Second best goal scorer for Real Madrid?
I don't know. They've all been injured. If Eden Hazard had been fit all season, might
exactly.
Have been
but that's my point. So Karim Benzema had to do it on his own, right? Messi has been great, but he had support of Suarez and Griezmann, and even Ansu Fati to a certain extent.
I'm going to leave the Messi maniacs.
Messi
at Lawrence Julian on Twitter.
But
let him know what you
already
think. Karim Benzema greater season than Lionel Messi.
Of course, player of the season in La Liga without
whatever.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hi, more quick hits goodness. Juventus play Lazio this evening, but as we mentioned, the title is virtually theirs anyway after Inter's draw. So I'm going to ask you about something else. These rumors linking Duvan Zapata to Juventus. 30 million euros plus goalkeeper Mattia Perin. Does this make sense to you? Zapata is 29 years old.
It doesn't. I mean, I watched a game against Hellas on Saturday afternoon, and he's been really good at times this season, and he scored loads of goals. And against Brescia the other night, for example, it was really good. But in that game, I was like, maybe he doesn't want to play. Maybe it was too hot. Maybe it was too tired. I don't know. And then I read those links and those rumors, and it would not make any sense to me.
And by the way, to put a number on this, I mean, Mattia Perin obviously hasn't played much. I mean, he didn't play in the start of the season at Juventus and went on loan to Genoa. This is a guy who's been capped for Italy. He's 27 years old.
We thought he was going to be better than what he is now, right? When he was much younger, he looked like the future.
He made a mistake, I think, by going to Juve, because then they brought Buffon back and all of a sudden. But, he can still turn into a serviceable goalkeeper. I think without question, when they end up doing this deal, if it is 30 million plus Mattia Perin, I guarantee you they're going to slap 30 million on Mattia Perin minimum.
Yeah.
So then we're talking 60 million for a guy for Duvan Zapata, 29.
If I'm Atalanta,
I bite your hand off. Bite your hand off, especially given that you already have Luis Muriel there.
Yeah, exactly.
No sense at all.
Milan keep rolling along, destroying Bologna 5-1. Gab, Pioli is making a very strong case. And yet, are they still determined to replace him with Ralf Rangnick?
So the narrative all along has been Rangnick has said, yeah, I will come, but, you know, I'm going to be the super director of football, head of recruitment, technical director, and I also want to coach, right?
Okay.
Wenger style, because obviously that ended very well.
Sir Alex Ferguson style.
But yeah, that was kind of another era in football. Feels like a long time ago.
Yeah, it feels like.
And I think the thinking was, all right, let's accommodate him. I think now they're having second thoughts. I mean, I argued all along. Look, Pioli doesn't care. Pioli doesn't have an ego. I think it's a weakness and a strength of his that he doesn't have an ego. He knows any kind of system. If he can work with Rangnick and kind of help mediate for a year and be like,
be like the guy
on the sidelines and saying, like, this is how we want to play. I don't think, like I said, Pioli's not wedded to a system or style of play.
But does Rangnick strike you as the kind of guy who would want that? Or is more the kind of guy that I can do it all by myself, I can do all
those
jobs?
I'm sure he will. But at some point, Ralf Rangnick has to realize that as much for all the phenomenal work that he's done, he's not Pep Guardiola. He doesn't have the sporting credit, the sporting capital that Pep Guardiola does. He can't go and name all his terms and expect not to be some level
of
pushback.
Speak Italian either yet, does he? Or maybe just a little bit?
Well, maybe a little bit.
Yeah, but even that could help.
And also, he hasn't managed. He's coached the 1 year at Leipzig in the last 4 or 5 years.
He's had
issues in the past. So, I don't know. I think this would be a much better outcome. But they have a big decision ahead.
It's when you think that Milan are in a very good position, which they need, and yet somehow they find that they put themselves by their own mean in a bit of an uncomfortable situation. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? If you keep Pioli and you said that we keep Pioli, this is the continuity, it's but a bit of stability. They could change again.
If you keep Pioli, you still need to address the recruitment side because that was the big issue last year, right?
No, for sure.
And so they want to build something long term, and Rangnick is the guy to do that. But
okay, but you still bought very good players last summer with no proper, you know.
Yeah, you also made some very stupid deals, and those people are gone now.
True.
So, or on their way out. Another blow for Leicester City, who are easily beaten 3-0 by Tottenham Hotspur. Jules, you can either question Rodgers, who's won just 2 of 9 in all competitions since the restart, or praise the motivational and counter-attacking genius of Jose Mourinho.
Do you know what? I was at the game, so I will do both.
Oh.
It's beyond me how Wes Morgan, and Wes, I don't know you, I've got nothing against you, but you're 36, you cannot run anymore. Even in the back three, as a sweeper, I don't understand how he can start a game like this.
Well, so Juncu's suspended, so he figures, let's just add more central defenders, no?
Just play Ryan Bennett and Johnny Evans as a back four with the two kids at full backs, and then that's it. I don't know. I mean, yesterday he was completely out of his depth from the beginning. I mean, okay, against Harry Kane, it would be hard for anyone, especially Harry Kane in that kind of form. But even the back three from Rodgers, I don't get it. It's not even bringing you good results anyway, so I'm not sure. And you did the back three even when Soyuncu was there, so it's not even because Soyuncu. I don't know. I didn't get it.
Come on, praise Mourinho.
Mourinho. Yeah, it was really good. And this is the Spurs that we will see next season. Harry Kane said after the game that, you know, they worked hard on this and it's completely different to Pochettino. And it's far more pragmatic. It's don't bother with possession. Don't bother with build the play. Just go quickly forward, quickly in transition. It worked so well yesterday. They were so good. I mean, Harry Kane is so good. Every time I see him live and I just watch him and only him. I don't care where the ball is. He's just a magnificent player. I'm completely in awe of him. But it's so good with Lucas and Son. And I think if you get even a better player than Lucas, for example, although I like him a lot, you would be even stronger. And yes, sometimes against when you can't be the lower block and you face a team with the lower block, a bit like Bournemouth.
Then you're going to ask questions whether...
Yeah, you struggle a bit, but then maybe Lo Celso can do something different. Maybe you start Lamela. Maybe then you go and get another player who can... you know, break the deadlock in those kind of games. But I mean, they're going to, you know what? They're going to be strong next season, Spurs. I'm telling you that.
Ooh, I wouldn't be so convinced about that. But hey, time will tell. By the way, did I mention it's only 8 days until Harry Kane's birthday?
Yeah. And who else? Who else's birthday?
I wonder.
So when the Bundesliga returned behind closed doors, we saw a huge amount of away wins. And all these clever people drew big conclusions about how home advantage had been wiped out. But a study in the Financial Times this weekend shows that the opposite has happened in the Premier League and Serie A. Home teams are stronger without fans. What's going on?
All right, I'm going to say this. Sample size. It does my freaking head. I know we have to have something to write about, right? Yep. So the Bundesliga comes back. Nobody else has started. It's like, oh, look, these away teams are winning. Oh, what does it mean? Oh, the importance of the fans. It's nonsense. It's nonsense. We're drawing these massive conclusions. Same nonsense with the five subs and stuff, right? Yeah. Jumping out and saying, well, this means that. No, we're not. These aren't very many games, and it's as simple as that. You obviously still have some level of home field advantage because you're not traveling halfway around the country. You know the pitch. You know the dressing room.
Yeah.
I just urge people to not draw massive conclusions on a tiny sample size. It's common sense. But hey, put a microphone in front of a manager or an ex-pro and ask him, like, whoa, you know, we've had three away wins. What does that mean? Oh, my God. I hate this. I hate this freaking psychological pseudoscience nonsense.
There was another one about yellow cards and red cards for away teams, wasn't it? That was lower now than before, which, again, small sample. But maybe the fact that there's no fans to put a bit of pressure on the ref means that he's more lenient with the away team, maybe?
That one seems more logical, but you know what? Who knows? Let's apply some science to it rather than just talking out of a rear end based on a tiny sample. Yeah. Having nearly conquered the world at Flamengo, Jorge Jesus is back in Europe. Is this where we find out if he really is a genius or just a guy who coached a super club in Rio?
It's quite interesting. I think what's fascinating to see next year what he will do with Benfica. Benfica team and club in disarray completely. They signed Bruno Lage after looking so clear to win the league, and they didn't. And then Porto came back. They've got a good young generation coming through, but they still need a lot of reinforcement, I think, especially in the forward positions where they lost their, you know, Jonas and all those people who used to score like loads of goals and now don't have really very good strikers. So, but I don't know, for him to go back there, he must feel like, okay, because he was, as you said, in a good place in Flamengo with a very strong squad, maybe the best squad in South America.
By a large margin.
Yeah. And then maybe he thought it was too easy. Flamengo, and then he wanted a bit of a challenge at Benfica, certainly a challenge.
No, you're managing Flamengo, you're winning everything in sight. I just wonder, why don't you just stay there?
Maybe that's pretty good. Yeah, it's probably a good life.
Like, it's obvious you're not going to get a big job at a big club in the Big Five at this stage because of what's happened before, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, interesting. Michele Menalo very rarely spoke in public during his time at Chelsea or even at Monaco. When he was the first black technical director at a major European club, he gave a long interview this weekend, though, to The Guardian and talked about race and perception. Gab, you know him well. Your thoughts?
So, I think I'm right in saying that. I mean, I might be forgetting somebody, but I think apart from Eric Abidal, you know, at sort of heavyweight clubs, there's not been another black director of football. Maybe Pape Diouf at Marseille.
Yeah, Patrick Kluivert at PSG.
Oh, and Kluivert, yeah.
Yeah.
That ended well.
Yeah.
I mean, the remarkable thing to me about Emanalo, and remember, he kind of been nearly 10 years since he was there, was the amount of crap that he had to put up with. And I think some of it, I think, probably had to do with race. But he had a whole bunch of other things stacked against him.
Yeah.
The fact that he's Nigerian. He'd never played in England.
Yeah.
He's college educated, which, you know, let's face it,
it's rare.
The punditocracy here, they don't always like that.
Yeah.
He was, you know, he played in the World Cup for Nigeria, but he was never a superstar footballer. Nobody had ever really heard about him as a footballer.
Yeah.
All these things wrapped into one, I think, made the job harder for him. And yet, if you go back, if you look at the development of Chelsea's youth academy over the years, which obviously he didn't go and pick the players, but he put the conditions in place where they could have that. And now, you know, you see what it is with all the kids in the youth team today. Plus, of course, Declan Rice, Eddie Nketiah, also former Chelsea guys. You look at the fact that they banned simply the buying and selling. People talk about, oh, the loan army, and they make too much money off this, or stockpiling. Yeah, okay. Everybody wants to stockpile talent. Who says, oh, I don't want more talent? He put that in place. He allowed Chelsea to stay afloat. And he did it while working with so many different managers, many of them with strong, strong personalities.
That's true.
I think he certainly got a raw deal at the time. And I think people look back and say, hey, you know, what do we want from a club?
Do you think he deserves more credit than what he has?
I mean, look, I'm biased here because I know the guy. But I think definitely people should look at that and say, this is what I want. from a director of football. Did he get some things wrong? Of course, because, you know, it's always a number game. But
yeah.
And I'm not going to go back to Kevin De Bruyne, Mohamed Salah, which, you know, young listeners might not even know ever played for Chelsea and were dumped out the door, not by him, not but by him. somebody else. But in terms of the Monaco time now, as I understand it, he felt a little bit hamstrung there.
Yeah.
Is it just people then kind of rewriting history or?
Yeah, I mean, I think he did some good things. And again, others, I mean, not so good. But he found in Leonardo Jardim, especially, someone really, really difficult to work with. And I think it was never going to work. Jardim wanted full power. The fact that Emenalo was there made that he could not have them unless he got Emenalo out, which eventually he did, although Jardim also got the sack. So I think he was ugly at time. And it's a bit of a shame because I agree with you, knowing people who've worked with him at Monaco said that I think he had more to offer than what he actually offered to Monaco, which I think is a shame.
Let's talk about Michael Emenalo's old club, Monaco. They hired former Southampton, Spurs and Leipzig recruitment guru Paul Mitchell, the wunderkind,
yeah,
which I guess is very good. But then they also chose Niko Kovac as manager, which seems, well...
So they didn't choose Niko Kovac. He chose Niko Kovac. Paul Mitchell chose Niko Kovac, sacked Robert Moreno on Saturday morning, to the surprise of a lot of people, including the players. And then we'll have to see. I agree with you. Right now, if I look at it, I'm thinking, like, this would not have been my call. But, like, Moreno would not have been my call. Like, Thierry Henry would not have been my call. Like, Leonardo Jardim coming back would not have been my call. So whether it was Paul Mitchell or someone else before him, they keep making those crazy mistakes.
I read somewhere today that, they snubbed Pochettino and, you know, Mitchell wanted to reunite with Pochettino. Now, I don't know if you have more information on this. As I understand, Paul Mitchell worked with Pochettino at Southampton. They worked very well together.
Yeah.
Paul Mitchell then moves to Spurs. Yeah. And then, like, 6 months later, Paul Mitchell's like, screw this. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I don't think that Paul Mitchell and Pochettino, I'm sure there's a lot of respect, but I don't think those two are joined at the hip in any way, shape, or form whatsoever, despite the picture that certain media like to point.
Yeah.
In fact, I know for a fact that Spurs tried to recruit Paul Mitchell before they even thought of Pochettino.
Yeah. And I believe, and I was told again on Saturday, that Pochettino was not even in the discussion to take over Moreno. I think Paul Mitchell really wanted someone from Germany, or at least who'd been in the Bundesliga before, because of the idea that he has for the club and for the team and the way he wants them to play. Again, I'm not sure Kovac is the right guy for that. You know, if you told me, okay, you go and get Rose or Nagelsmann, you know, I know it's not possible, but, you know, those kind of guys, I would have gone, okay. But Kovac, I'm a bit skeptical right now, but we'll see. He is arriving today with his brother Robert, and they have a friendly tomorrow on Tuesday. Then we'll see what they do, but I don't know.
Maybe his thinking is Monaco can ditch Ligue 1 and join the Bundesliga.
Imagine.
That'd be pretty cool.
Leeds United are back in the Premier League. Gab, we don't often talk about the lower divisions and the Championship, but this is huge, right?
It is huge because this, by fan base, by history, is a Premier League club. Yeah. Shout out to the owner, Andrea Radrizzani, but especially big shout out to Marcelo Bielsa.
Marcelo, what a legend. Like,
there's a reason people love Bielsa, people love the story behind it. I was very skeptical about whether this would work in the Championship.
Okay.
Just simply because, you know, look at the conditions, and then Bielsa walks out on teams and things don't work. We saw it in Marseille, and I don't know how long it's going to last, but it's fantastic, the work he's done. And I think he's really changed minds and he's changed cultures. And I think from a neutral perspective, you know, if there is a club that can turn the Big Six into a Big Seven, it's Leeds United.
16 years they've been waiting to go back up. It's incredible. It's such a long time. I mean, when you think Liverpool, 30 years to win the title again, Leeds, 16 years to go back to the Premier League. It's crazy.
Now, we've talked about this before, but I never tire of celebrating the good guys, the warriors of the light. Santi Cazorla has left Villarreal after an astonishing comeback. Jules, help me celebrate him and tell me what's next.
Well, it seems that Qatar might be next. I was hoping and dreaming maybe that he would come back to Arsenal. I think he had a chat with Mikel Arteta about it maybe. But he looks like he could go to Qatar with Xavi, in Xavi's team, maybe get one last...
And then come back to Barcelona with Xavi.
I don't know about... Even if it's just for 1 year, you know, take a bit of money, bring the family over there. and enjoy his football for one last season. I'm a bit disappointed, I have to say, that he's not staying in La Liga at Villarreal. But it was a wonderful story anyway, the way that for more than 2 years he didn't play football, that he thought at some point he could not even walk again after all this issue with his Achilles and his foot and all those injuries. And yet, after, 10 surgeries, as we said, 2 years, it took some skin off his arm to put in his foot. The fact that, one, he was just about able to play again. Football, even just with his kids in the garden, which is something he could not do at some point. But then playing La Liga in that level, go back to the national team, and he would have gone to the Euros had the Euros happened this summer. I don't think he would go, unfortunately, next season, although we never know. And I think he was involved in 25 goals in La Liga between the goals he scored and the assist. It's incredible, absolutely incredible, fairy tale, miracle, call it whatever you want. But being such a nice guy, that's the thing. For the people who don't know him, Santi Cazorla is the sweetest man you could ever meet, and he deserves all the great things that happened to him in the last year or so, especially after the nightmare he had for so many months before.
Wonder what would have happened if Inter had somehow magically gotten him instead of Eriksen.
God, I don't
or like know. If they feel that, like, hey, look, Brozovic, you need an alternative. You can't play every game. What if Casola just comes over part time in Milan? And if you can't get Tonali, if you need a guy who passes the ball, I don't know.
Just on Villarreal, it looks like Unai Emery will be the manager next season, replacing Javier Calleja, who didn't really do a good job first half of the season. Did much better after the COVID break. But I mean, I don't know. If you're Villarreal, really, you go like Emery?
Gotta say, if you have a strong club that's behind you and all the guy has to do is coach and not speak and not, then Emery can do a job for you, right? Some degree?
We see. Well, I'm talking about Emery. One of his former club, Valencia, finished the season with a defeat at Sevilla.
Another one of his former clubs.
Yeah, another one of these. And well done to Julen Lopetegui, by the way, in Sevilla qualifying for the Champions League next season. And another campaign of turmoil.
Which seems to follow Emery everywhere.
Yeah, and these are with three different managers. Anger at owner Peter Lim and reports that everybody is for sale. Gab, will this club ever be settled? I mean, what's going on?
I mean, you've got supporters who've got very high expectations, but you also have a club that, I'm sorry, he's been turned into a receptacle of agents, of people cutting deals for reasons that people don't know. Peter Lim obviously inherited an enormous amount of debt. It's a shame. It's a shame because, you know, I'll tell you what, if there is a club that can turn the big two into three or four or five, you know, it is Valencia. Valencia should be the third biggest club in Spain alongside Atletico Madrid. And the fact that they're not is also because of repeated mistakes that keep getting made and getting players for short-termist reasons. I don't know what the deal is. I do know that this guy, Peter Lim, I don't know, if you can get your money out and hand the club over, either be committed properly, hire somebody,
the
right people.
What do you think is his aim? What is he doing?
I don't know. He's a real estate guy. He's whatever.
He must have something in mind. It's not possible. Like, otherwise, why bother?
On a lighter note, we have new champions in Turkey, and it's not one of the usual suspects.
No, it's not. It's not. It's Istanbul Başakşehir.
Oh, did you see how he pronounced that? Well done.
Yeah, well done.
You practiced that, didn't you?
No. I've been following them a long time because they had few players that you would know. Dembaba, for example, is there. Gael Clichy is there. Enzo Crivelli is there, if you like your French football. And they're a very young club, as they were only really formed in this, the way that we know them now, in 2014. They had big backup, I think, from Mr. Erdogan and the government.
People.
But anyway, they're there. They won it. They came really close last season and then bottled it up in the last two games of the season. This year, they've been very consistent. And although they probably benefited from the fact that Galatasaray and Fenerbahce and Beşiktaş had very average seasons, yes, of course, but Okan Buruk, the manager, did a really good job. Nothing fancy, nothing special, just being very solid, quite efficient. Robinho is there as well, by the way. I mean, incredible. Robinho
was not a Bayor there too?
He was there, but then left at the start of this season. So, yeah, incredible. Really, really good story.
For people who don't know, people who might be wondering why a lot of very famous players on big contracts end up in Turkey, it's because the tax rate in Turkey for foreign players
is low, I believe,
so much lower. It's closer to 15%.
Yeah, I think it was 13, but yeah.
So it's just very viable for them. And yeah, no, I said it's a good tale.
It is. And finally, eagle-eyed viewers spotted something unusual about referee John Moss' boots during the FA Cup game between Arsenal and City, Gab.
Okay, so...
How old is John Moss?
Sorry?
How old is John Moss?
I'm assuming...
How say, 50-something?
No, I think he's in his mid-40s, no?
Rather, I mean, he looks to me like he's 50.
But he wears his nickname on his boots. He wears personalized boots.
Why?
Which have his nickname, Mossy, on them.
Why? Does he believe he's a football player?
Apparently he is a football player. Apparently he plays to a decent standard recreationally.
Wow.
I just think, given what's going on right now with Premier League referees as a group, and there are some good ones, but as a group, given the season they've had, given the fact that they sent zero referees to the World Cup, for example, given the sense all the crap the PGMOL had, the last thing you need. There's more negative attention, more people to look at you and make fun of you and question you and Graham Souness gets angry.
Keep a low profile.
Just keep it low, Mossy. And focus on improving.
Mossy.
Honestly. Because look.
I mean, I saw it and I was like, WTF. Man, why do you do that to yourself?
No, this is the season where you had the weirdo decision that against Wolves. You had all the screw-up with the VAR intervening, not intervening, blah, blah, blah. You're the start of the season where they said, oh, no, no on-field reviews. We'll just do it different just because. You had the Sheffield United goal struck off when, oh, look, the goal line technology is not working. You know, enough of this crap. Have some humility.
Yeah.
Tell everybody, take a step back, focus on your refereeing, and we'll get out of this. And I feel for them because this is, again, I don't want to, they're not all bad. And I think Mike Riley does what he can. I think he's being pushed and pulled every which way. But this is a season to forget. And this is part of it. Look, John Moss can go out there and he can wear whatever the hell he wants, right? But to, it's because.
But not that. I'm sorry, Gab. Well, not that. I mean, I don't know. Put your kid's name on your shoes if you want. Put your mum's date of birth. I don't know. Put the Gab and Jewel podcast name on your shoes.
Yes, if you'd like to advertise it, we'll get you
but
some
not,
merch.
Don't
John.
Put Mossy on your boots. Come on.
This is the thing, right? Is because I'm not a foot fetishist or a footwear fetishist like you, I haven't been watching John Moss's boots throughout his career.
No, if but no one has.
So. I'm going to assume that this is something new because there's a bunch of weirdos who sit there looking at the feet of referees throughout games, right? So I'm assuming you introduced this now. For you to introduce this now, at this stage of the season, after the kind of season that referees
have
had
before,
man.
I know.
I don't know, man. All right, enough John Moss. And look, John, we kid, you're not one of the worst ones.
Yeah.
But just this is not smart.
This is not
good. Smart.
It's not good.
Let's go back and do this all again on Thursday when we could have even more clarity about who's going to win Serie A, which, of course, is really the last remaining championship up for grabs. Till then, au revoir.
Au revoir.